When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Elevate your summer with Osea's best-selling body care set. It's everything you need for radiant summer skin on the go. Featuring travel sizes of Osea's clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral skincare, like their best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Right now, you can get the bestseller's body care set, a $78 value, 33% off. And use code SUMMER to save an additional 10%. That's an additional 10% off at oceamalibu.com, code SUMMER.
I'm Chuck Mendenhall, and I'm here to record another one of these pre-game previews. This one on Mexican Independence Day, Grasso versus Shevchenko 2. Wasn't sure I'd be back in the studio here. It's been a long time since I've had an invitation to join the crew. I've seen Rashad Evans, Aaron Bronstetter, just to name a couple of guys who've been floating through. Pretty sure they lost my number, but I'm back here. You know what I mean? I'm resilient.
They finally found your number to call you back.
Yes, I know.
You know
what I mean? Exactly.
Nightmare here. Blunt rotation one more time.
I think generally we get together for these things for pay-per-views or big shows like that. This one's just a fight night, so you know it's big if they're calling in the big dog for that one. Both men have grown a little bit in their waist.
Why are Chuck?
Oh, sorry. But it is good to be back. It's always fun to visit Jersey City, and it has been too long. I think it's been a couple of months for me, so this will be good.
All right, here's the thing. Saturday, September 16th, Mexican Independence Weekend in Las Vegas. No, Canelo's not fighting.
No. He got pushed out.
UFC is fighting. Yeah, T-Mobile Arena, UFC Fight Night. UFC Noche, and we are not racist.
Try to be.
No.
Morning Combat coming at you with the pregame preview. Brian Campbell.
But we are white.
Co-host Luke Thomas in the middle of a family member in these parts. They finally found your number to call you back.
Yes, I know.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
The Iron Man or the Ice Man or, you know, the Ice Hole, Chuck Mendenhall.
Yeah, ooh, I like that. I like that.
Ice Hole Truckers over
Nightmare Blunt rotation one more time. Look at this.
So this is not too long removed from UFC 293. We're in this kind of weird year for the UFC where sometimes we get bad matchmaking. This is really good matchmaking and, for my money, really good product placement and brand awareness for their customer, for the UFC, which is trying to cut into that traditional combat sports, the two big Mexican holidays, you know, Mexican combat sports holidays, Cinco de Mayo, the Las Vegas trip for Independence Day in September. They're going that on that day. Mm-hmm. No Canelo. He's September 30th in Las Vegas. And they're bringing a free TV card with the championship on the line at 125 pounds in the women's flyweight division. And new Mexican-born champion Alexa Grasso in a rematch with Valentina Shevchenko. First and foremost, Luke, is it UFC Noche? Does that make any sense? UFC Night?
UFC
what are we
nights.
Doing here?
Yeah, UFC Night.
Isn't it a fight Noche?
Isn't that I guess it doesn't make sense to do Pelear or Pelea.
Pelea.
Yeah, it's a little too much. So I guess they just call it UFC Noche. Listen, I tell you what. I don't necessarily... I am a big fan of what they're doing. I think that this is a great thing that they're... undertaking. It makes sense in Las Vegas. It's a new way to promote. I tell you that if you see it, when you go to Canelo fight, you obviously see it. But BC, it was an eye-opener for me because all the times I've seen big Mexican fighters, they were on like a big Canelo card. So, you know, even great names sometimes don't stand out, or it's like other Latinos. But like when David Benavidez fought Caleb Plant, and you got to see, and I was like, you know, you don't expect him to have the Canelo following. Dude, it wasn't far behind. Like, I was blown away at how much they rallied for him. These are rock-ribbed fight fans. The UFC has made massive inroads into this market. They have a great opportunity for a great fight. Putting it on, basically, I think it's still on ESPN Plus, but certainly not on pay-per-view. You know, I won't call it a home run. They're going to fumble some stuff, which is the point I was making. Well, but in general, this is great.
Well, not only is it great, the card's not a pay-per-view, but it feels like a special event given the fact that it's in almost a pay-per-view slot on a normal pay-per-view weekend for boxing on the highest level. But, Chuck, giving it to the people, there's something to that. It's a strategy. this card's actually deeper than the pay-per-view card just a couple weeks before UFC 292, like considerably deeper. But like,
it's a better main event.
Can this gamble work? Is Grasso the right fighter at the right time in this Mexican takeover revolution with Brandon Moreno? And we've seen all, you know, all these new, Yair Rodriguez got to the title level, Aldana.
Yeah.
Can this work? Can this really work?
I think so. But I mean, they're almost a little late. And I know you can't change the date of September 16th, but at the same time, you know, there was a moment when this might have been a huge event. If Yair Rodriguez had come through in his situation, if Aldana had come through in her situation, who knows? I don't know what they would have done with this card, but I think that you have enough. We used to kind of place Cain Velasquez and be like, okay, let's see. And then we kind of talked about Henry Cejudo, too. These are guys that weren't Mexico-born. They weren't going to do, but they were moving shows down to Mexico City. They were doing that sort of thing. And it felt like they were making the inroads. This feels like the actual inroads. Yeah. This feels like the moment. And if you look at some of the fights that were scotched off of this card, you know,
it was going to be even better.
It was going to be a huge event. And I still think it's a very good, as long as that main event is intact, I think we're in good shape. But I mean, they were trying to kind of stack this card. It would have been five really good fights if it had come through the way it was supposed to.
So I think your answer to it, could this work? I think it could. Maybe they got lucky that there's no big major boxing event here, but the continued education of the Mexican fight fan to put UFC on that same level, well, you need the homegrown stars, and they've proven that they can do that. And, you know, Luke Cain, it didn't work as an experiment, but Cain was always a shoot-first wrestler, to be fair.
He was supposed to be the big promising guy. He certainly was when he beat Brock for the local second-generation or third-generation Latino market. But going to Mexico, you know, my wife one time made a point about Cain, and when he fought Verdum, because they did a bunch of media, and she watched it. She was like, I don't know if you know this, but Verdum's Spanish is better than Cain's, like substantially. You know, but now.
So you've got somebody who can actually inform you on
Yeah, she heard it, and she was like, I think it's improved substantially since then. But
how
at
does
the time,
she pronounce Bruce Leroy by any chance?
You'd have to ask her. I can get it to record. But the point being I'm trying to make here is, you know, they didn't quite have the local turn and the way they needed. And, you know, there has been some faltering in 2023, but the first fight between Grasso and Shevchenko, I rewatched it for today. What a fantastic fight this was. What an interesting rivalry. One of the cases of an immediate rematch I do think makes sense.
Yes.
And a very interesting tactical battle. There's a lot to like about this.
And it comes
event
at the perfect time where this division is, I want to say resetting, but really launching for the first time.
It is
resetting, but I basically what I want to mean is this division's identity, you know, it hasn't been the Nico Montano era. It had this division's identity has been Valentina Shevchenko, and she's been incredible, and she's been all-time great in that run. But all great runs come to an end. So, Chuck, when we look back, we've been blessed with some crazy upsets in the past 18 months of MMA, right? From Leon Edwards, Poatan, all the way through Juliana Pena, so many big moments. What should we have seen coming about the Shevchenko upset loss to Alexa Grasso in March? And are those answers more about Shevchenko or more about Grasso in terms of what we missed?
We get into these tidal wave moments where we're like, who's the GOAT? Who's the GOAT? We were talking about Shevchenko in these terms, almost uncertain terms in these moments. I feel like she had kind of assumed that, especially with Amanda Nunes having lost to Pena at one point fairly recently. And you're basically building her up, but we saw a very competitive, to the point where you're like, the scorecards go either way in her previous fight with Talos Santos.
Sure.
And I think that was maybe a red flag, but I think the bigger red flag, honestly, man, I think you might have pointed this out at some point. 35 is kind of a magic number where people fall off. There's a stat. Unless you are the heavyweight division, right? I feel like there's
Two and 29 for 35-year-old. Anyone under 35, anyone over 35 in title fights, and that's basically it's like 50-50 if you
for welterweight and under.
For welterweight
and we're talking about
125. Yeah.
We're talking about Shevchenko, who's had a competitive over three different kinds of combat sports going back 20 years. She's 35 years old. You wonder. It's not a Max Holloway situation, like where, you know, he, like you mentioned, he has an odometer that's running, but he's still showing up and he's still doing it. But you do wonder with Shevchenko, has she lost that thing? Because I thought she looked great for the, you know, you just watched the fight. I thought she looked good through, especially as the fight was going on, and then she gets beat in the fourth round. But she was in a little bit of trouble early in that fight.
So a couple times she was in trouble. So she was in trouble. There was a crucifix that Shevchenko got in the second round, I believe. Now, eventually, the great part about what Grasso did was she like relentlessly worked out of it, but she certainly lost that round. She had her back taken in the third round as well. But again, you know, did well to fight it off. But the story of that fight, as far as I can tell, is two things. One, it turned Shevchenko into a wrestler. She was matter-of-factly just losing on the feet, had her moments, but losing on the feet. And the thing that really stood out to me when watching it again, man, I really believe this is true. It happens for all champs. They have a bunch of advantages that the rest of the division doesn't have, and that's how they excel so fast and beat all their rivals. But you can only get so good, and you can't really improve. And then when you fight the best over time, a lot of tape develops on you. The Grasso team, they knew not just what the right ideas were, but the actual tactical choices they made about working around her lead hook and all the her defensive tendencies. They had a brilliant game plan, and she was there. All of the tape on her is now starting to work against her because well-schooled fighters can really begin to dissect her, and now the division's catching up.
You're right, and Valentina was as busy and decorated as anyone we'd seen. It did feel like if there were some things we should have saw coming, then maybe it was the Valentina, you know, facing real competition against Jennifer Maia for the first time where she had to make some adjustments. And then certainly the Tyler Santos fight was a stopping point on asking a question if things had caught up to Valentina or is there parts of her game that isn't completely well-rounded. I think the best thing I can say about the way the title changed hands there is it wasn't necessarily like Nunes Pena won. That even though Pena had this incredible moment that was caused by her heart and will, you could not have watched that fight, including the comments afterwards and putting the pieces together, not realize that wasn't the best of Amanda Nunes. That felt like an aberration. It did. The rematch seemed to confirm that, right?
I'm just mouthing.
The rematch doesn't always confirm it, but it really did right there. Grasso didn't win this by accident. Even if you're focusing on the big Shevchenko mistake, which led to the finish, she finished her.
Even the back take was...
Even Nunes getting finished by Pena, we always said, well, look, she didn't actually tap. Yeah. She kind of just fell apart and like was like a dead body, and they just waved the... I know she tapped, but it was more out of just exhaustion. This was fight the champ at her best, no excuses, no injuries, and submit her.
Yeah.
So should we look at Alexa Grasso, who, by the way, is the betting underdog in the rematch with Shevchenko,
which I understand,
as somebody who's trying to protect their stake like Leon Edwards was against Usman and prove it's not a one-hit wonder, or is she someone that like could have legit staying power?
There is another stat that sort of compounds almost with the, you know, being 35, but the person who loses the belt generally in these rematches, you know, doesn't do well. Like, they come back, and I think that that's where Amanda Nunes kind of bucked the trend, to be honest. And I remember pointing this out back then, but there's something psychological that happens too. And you mentioned this. I'm like, okay, so Grasso comes in well prepared. What are the adjustments that Shevchenko is going to make? And then how does Grasso counter? But at the same time, I think the psychological edge now goes to Grasso. He's the younger fighter. You're doubting now. Like, Vegas is doubting. I think some people, I've talked to certain people who think that the first fight was fluky, but you're like, now you're doubting somebody and putting an extra chip on her shoulder to do it again. You know what I mean? And I feel like you look at it, this kind of, in those abstract kind of intangibles, and I kind of you like Grasso. Also, they're booking her in a kind of emotional moment, September 16th, Mexican Independence Day. They're kind of counting on her showing
up. They're making her the face of the flag in a lot of ways.
Saying.
This is a big moment. So, Luke, is there any elements to it that's fluky? Like, it was a Shevchenko mistake that set it up, but boy, did Grasso slide into the moment and make a finish happen that we wouldn't have expected that, would it?
So there's a competing narrative, if you want to believe it. The reality was Grasso won the fight on the feet to the extent that it was on the feet, certainly the first round. But then rounds 2 and 3 were Shevchenko rounds, kind of in a boring way, but through wrestling. There is at least an argument to make that you could see Shevchenko physically picking it up in the fourth and maybe Grasso starting to fade when she made that error that Grasso legitimately took advantage of because of her good preparation. Like, there's nothing fluky about that. The rematch, to me, the biggest question is the physicality and the takedown defense and the ability to cause separation between Grasso and Shevchenko. If she can manage that, there's no doubt in my mind she can win.
So this is a different fight from distance, and that represents where the odds are.
Like, again, we go back to it. Footwork being a part of takedown defense, all of it being related. Because, again, Shevchenko couldn't do a whole lot to her except get good positions. So Grasso can survive, but that's not enough to beat her if this fight's going to be there. You got to shut that shit down quickly. Can't she do that? Shevchenko, even at 35, still a physical powerhouse.
All right, Chuck, Grasso in that fight showed us that she was better than we thought, but it's really about this larger reinvention to this new weight class. She you know, weighed out of the former weight class at 115, which had the deeper pool. Now 125 suddenly infused with everybody, including Rose. I mean, it's wild how deep this division got. She's the queen of this division. Was it more about just finding the right weight class and then allowing her skills to, because I didn't feel like there was anything actually fluky about the way she won it. She was at the right moment, the right time, and she delivered the right performance. So how good is she compared to this growing division around her? I mean, give me the answers here, Chuck.
Man, feeling
Black Thought.
She's definitely become better and better. There was a time between 2017 and 2019, I believe, where she went 2-3. She loses to like Felice Herrigs. Like those
Yikes.
Types. Yes. And you're sort of like,
Chuck.
But I mean,
lost to Felice Herrigs. I'm like, shit.
I'm just saying, like, you wouldn't think that would be on her resume, but there was a point in time, because she had a lot of hype before that. I felt like she kind of had some hype, but that took it away. And I'd be lying if I said I foresaw that she was going to come back and become a champion and, like, kind of turn it on as she has. But she's been a very bright fighter. She's kind of, what is it, the Lobo Gym? What is
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like they're mm-hmm. really well coached. And,
which means wolf.
Yeah. And they're well coached, and I feel like she has shown that. And I think just her showing up in that fight, the first round, you could tell that there wasn't a lot of intimidation. There, right. you imagine that, like, this is somebody who we'd put up almost on a mythological level in that women's flyweight. Like, we were talking about Shevchenko in terms of, well, you know, the GOAT and all these things. And sometimes people just aren't buying into that. They use it as fuel, but you could just tell that she was not going to be intimidated by
her. Look how well they scouted her. They scouted her, dude. They knew all the different parts of her tendencies, of her shot choices. Again, they were overmatched physically when it came to it, but at distance. Remember how many times she was able to cover distance and then get Valentina leaning back and then drill her. You couldn't believe it. You're like, oh my God, she keeps doing it. They knew. If they can scout that well before, what's to say they couldn't do that again? Like, this is a very well, like, the strategic abilities of the coaches over there is high level. Like, they're in this fight, make no mistake about it. I believe that.
Valentino is 35 now. The first fight in March before she turned.
In good birthday. Shape for 35.
I'm sure for her birthday on Instagram, there's been a lot of creeps probably, you know, commenting.
She's probably firing a lot of guns.
She has the grossest audience, pound for pound.
Luke, dude, her fans
are the grossest.
That is true, actually.
100% are into autoerotic asphyxiation, which is, you know, if that's your bag,
Cannibal Corpse has a whole album about that topic.
Probably, and more than that. You know, that's a fair point, but I'm just going to say, like, her fans, I mean, you need to go to horny jail. You know.
So how big of a...
You're talking to one of them.
Yeah, like, stop.
Look,
it, please.
You said Amanda Nunes bucked the trend of winning back the title, especially at an advanced age.
Tell me you do no fucking.
In some ways, Adesanya did the same thing, although we consider him closer to the peak of the prime in a lot of ways, but he went back in there after losing the title. How big would this win be for Shevchenko? Is this win merely to put a giant wad of gum on the hole in the side of the dam of her eventual rise to all-time greatness, which she'll still get to? She's proved that. She's earned that. But how big a win from a GSP correcting the Matt Serra, you know, hole on his resume and doing it emphatically?
I think it would be big in the sense that from this, you know, from the people in the bubble, I don't feel like it was a fluke. So if she goes in there and makes it seem like a fluke suddenly, she goes in there and blows right through Alexa Grasso, you'd be like, well, I mean, now this is crazy. Like, she's, you know, able to restore. But we just haven't seen that. But I think if she's able to recapture that title, we were already talking about her in the stratosphere of, like, the women's all-time fighters. I mean, to me, that would be a big deal. Because I feel like this is when it starts to go stack against your age. You have somebody who, like you were saying, Not intimidated. I think you've worn the target long enough now where, you know, just stay hungry at that level and to be that target for so long, to overcome that is very difficult.
Yeah, you motivate somebody that talented and dangerous to be at their absolute no question best, like she's going to have to be here. You're going to get a dangerous version, even at 35, of Shevchenko. Luke, you know this.
I don't think there's any question. She's strategic as well. She's technical. When is she not technical? I mean, even when you make a mistake or overcommitment to a certain kind of technique, whatever you want to attribute the loss to Grasso, to lack of focus, you know, no one can have perfect performances all the time, dude. She's a fucking, dude, she's an institution, and she is the institution of this division. Like, you know, I mean, that's who she is. But again, I go back to it, man. I think, like, I really think people are sleeping. Like, they always talk about, like, the hunger of Mexican fighters, like, the willing to go to war. But she got outplayed on the feet in the first fight. She got outplayed. That's where she took the back. The back happened standing on the feet. She got outplayed on the feet, fair and fucking square. No two ways about it.
It's crazy, too, because if you look at the stats, and I mean, you just watch it, but just kind of glance at the stats, she was getting outstruck. But, of course, a lot of that's inside, right? Like, it's a lot of inside stuff. But I just think that having done it once, you know, and then still being doubted works for Grasso. If you just kind of look at her psychology, sure. The way that she's the way she talks and thinks, I think it benefits her in the end. It'd be really interesting. I mean, I love this type of fight because you could see the path easily for Shevchenko in that first fight. Like, what it was going to be. Do you just ratchet it to a 10 and just say, like, all right, I don't care if we spoil, you know, Mexican Independence Day and everybody boos me, but I'm going to win the way I need to win. You know what I mean?
When we saw Shevchenko at her greatest, which was the run initially she had as flyweight champion, she could win any single way, and she certainly can. And even if we felt she had holes in wrestling against Santos, you know she worked as hard as crazy to build up to the Grasso fight to try to repair that hole. She can do everything. Do we need to see her, though, be more offensive in trying to prove this point and come back and win this? Because when we have seen her out of necessity, think of, like, the second-half rallies against Amanda Nunes. I mean, Shevchenko is awesome. She's known more as the counter-striker, and maybe that's where she's at her best. But if she goes attacking Grasso here and becomes the aggressor...
When does she do that? When does she do that? Dude, this ain't Jessica Eye, bro.
She had to do it against Holly Holm, and she
I mean, I know. See, the thing is, Grasso started out as not necessarily a slam dunk prospect. An interesting prospect, a good prospect. Yes. But it wasn't like she was like Bo Nickel or something.
Right.
Like, holy fucking shit.
She was just young and from Mexico. And
that's right.
She was getting some wins.
And I think all of us were like, can Mexico, at the time, obviously, but this is the best it's ever been in Spanish speaking MMA. So, like, you know, 7-8 years ago, you had a question of like how far they could go. Dude. They're ready. Like, they're here. Like, they are on par with it. And that last fight was fascinating to see. I really think that the limits where she couldn't do that in the wrestling game, and I think you're going to win this one. We'll fucking see.
Yeah.
Damn. This is a great fight in the midst of a great division and a crazy month for this division. You think whoever...
Coming down from those gummies you
get. Do you guys get the sense, like, Shevchenko, her identity... is fighting, right? Like, she's just such a...
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like there's certain people, like, she travels almost nomadically from camp to camp. She's been doing it for so long. And I think that she looks at herself as like... I think she looks at it like, what happened that night is not it.
Yeah.
This is... What's about to happen is that. And it's just that weird, like, she's got something to her that just always keeps it alive. Like, if she shows up and does it, it would be because that's her mindset, too. Like, she just believes she is that person, and that's where she belongs, you know?
But, Chuck, even if she wins here, I do think her, like, already she lost the title. Recapturing it would
that
be
is
big.
True.
Her days are numbered, matter what.
100%.
Whether she beats Grasso or not,
yeah.
I don't, like...
Well, my point for either
The rest of the 125ers are coming for.
Look, if Grasso gets a second win over Shevchenko, it says a lot about the further forward trajectory of how we should look at her and what she has accomplished. And for Shevchenko to regain it, it's another massive, you know, jewel on the crown. But... is there any scenario in which this might demand a third fight? I'm not really sure, because the people knocking on the door next, from Aaron Blanchfield to the winner of Rose Namajunas and Manon Farreau, to like a solid group. You got the old guard, the same guard that already fought Valentina and lost, that are still in that top 10, but the ones coming behind them also are very...
And we are recording this before...
Before Rose,
yes.
Macy Barber, Miranda Maverick, King Casey O'Neill. I mean, you're
That's starting to accumulate names. I mean, I feel like you get to that point in all these divisions, because you could start to make cases for lots of rematches, but there's points when you got a lot of exciting possibilities in your contenders, you got to keep it rolling, right?
We would only get a trilogy if this was a fight of the year and Shevchenko won, correct?
Or people thought she got away with like a horrible robbery.
Something like that. Which would be unfortunate.
No one wants. Not trying to jinx it.
What do we settle as the true meaning of this fight to Shevchenko's resume? You can argue that she's on the Mount Rushmore of women's MMA right now. You can certainly make that argument, okay? If she wins this and regains her title and adds more title defenses against these other big names out there, Rose is a potential huge one. If she gets out of that early fight, we have no idea. If she doesn't win, though, and this is the end of her title run, who knows who she could fight on the way out or how long she would want to stay fighting. But how important is this fight getting a win and cementing what we feel like she's already accomplished?
What do you think?
One of the most consistent and decorated and accomplished champions in history. But does she need this to retain all that? Does she need this win to sort of cement
that? I think she's kind of solidified herself. Win or lose, I don't know. You tell me. But I feel like win or lose, like where she's at, what she was able to do with this division, and I forget. Well, how many was it? Like nine in a row, like
something like that.
She's got like six or seven title defenses. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So I feel like it really comes down to, for the longest time, it was kind of like Amanda Nunes, Valentina. I still at this point would probably have Amanda now number one.
Yes.
And then I would have Shevchenko. I don't know if it would matter to me if she's
Cyborg there too. Don't
she
forget.
She is Cyborg. Cyborg is there. The only difference, and I this is always the hardest thing. You grapple with this all the time, is like Cyborg's level of competition over the years. It's just, it's not her
fault.
She
has good wins.
She does have good wins.
That's why I posed this
and question. And her longevity is insane.
Because
that's 100%.
That's why I posed this question. Because the one negative against what Shevchenko has done, now she already established herself at 35, even with losing twice to Nunes, and both were very close, she already established that she's a she's a great threat in that division. What she's done at 25 has been amazing. But now that the division has caught up to her, she had a close fight with Maya, had a real close fight with Tyler Santos, loses to Grasso. If she loses again, how much would we look at what she accomplished and say, well, that division sucked. It was Jessica Eye, it was Chukagian, and it was Lauren Murphy.
Well, sometimes the larger picture does have to sort of unfold that way, doesn't it?
So that's what I'm saying. Is there more at stake in what she needs to do here to prove she can beat the new generation?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the reality is the best way to leave a division is when you have to hand back the belt to everyone because they couldn't take it from you. What GSP did, again, people say he got lucky in the Hendricks fight, whatever, he still won. It's what John Jones did. I mean, you're talking about the people who just, you literally cannot get this off of my hands. So I'm just going to have to like gift it to you fucking chumps. That's what you want. If she was able to beat Grasso, I mean, there's still a question of other ones, but to do it at 35, I think would be, I wouldn't say necessarily her most important win, but in the catalog of important wins, that one would hold a special place. Yes, I do believe that.
If Shevchenko wins back the title and if Rose can advance quickly in this division, I think that's a big fight that they would make and I'd be all in for that. But win or lose for Shevchenko, does she get offered a vacant bantamweight title shot? Is that what the promotion seems to be waiting for in advancing what has happened post-Amanda Nunes retirement? We don't know what's going to happen to 145. It feels like Dana's going to fold it. 135, you can argue they should keep it alive.
Need some help. Needs some renovation.
Is the Shevchenko loss the best thing that can happen for women's bantamweight and the promotion?
Or a win and just moving up, either way. But moving up,
I think that would be the better scenario.
What, winning?
She wins and moves up. I think that's the better scenario.
So you wouldn't need her to say, hold on, hang around and fight Blanchfield first. Hold on, hang around and fight,
If she's smart, she steers clear of Blanchfield and goes.
Yeah. if I'm Shevchenko, I mean, everyone wants to pretend elite fighters don't pick and choose who they fight. A fucking course they do. Not all the time, but sometimes when it matters, especially when they're moving weight classes, I wouldn't fucking blame her. Her resume is, again, in the scenario, well, that's already amazing, but in the scenario you're positing, it'd be even better. You couldn't criticize it. Why are you smart?
Because you use positing. I've never actually heard it used that way. I'm sort of saying, is that a, Greek derivative of position? I don't understand.
How do you say positing in Spanish? Is there?
No sé. I don't know.
No sé.
All right. Well, that's your main event for UFC Noche. Yes, not a pay-per-view card.
Noche.
But close enough, why
Coco
we are
Limonada.
Giving it the pregame preview treatment where it goes without saying, so I didn't say it off the top. But you know what you're getting thanks to the magic of this Modelo that Chuck's drinking and this IPA.
I'm hiding it back here.
Do you know what's true about my wife's last name?
You're still getting the magic of real talk.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Particularly like men do.
Yeah, no one wants to hear this. But
in this era of suffrage, Luke.
Suffrage?
It's like ellipses. In the
no. Isn't that plural for suffering?
Not necessarily. I don't know. But I was going to say was, I'm not going to say my wife's last name, but let's just imagine it sounds like Gutierrez, right?
Okay.
Gutierrez.
Yeah.
When my wife, we used to go to bars, she would say her last name with her accent. And the fucking bartender every time would be like, what? What fucking name? He'd be like, lady, I can't understand you. And I would literally go over there and just like this, I'd be like, yeah, Gutierrez. And he'd be like, why didn't you say so? Shit.
Yeah, see?
Fucking A. And then he'd go and find it right away, you know?
Every situation needs a gringo to clarify.
Yeah. I was like, step aside. Let me handle this.
Step aside. I'm doing the hump. Yeah, okay, so our co-main event. And I think this
dude,
will
you know
be-
what I noticed? I notice I'm starting to get gray hairs in my mustache. It's over for me, bro. The gray has taken
me
away.
Do the drapes match the carpet?
Oh, yeah, dude. I got some grays. I got grays.
That means he's got a gross a-hole. Yeah. Wow.
I mean. What is yours? Amazing?
So, speaking of shit, let's go on this card. If this ends up being the co-main event, I'm certainly into it. Okay? This is not a pay-per-view. It's a glorified fight night card. And I like this card a lot. But Kevin Holland is coming the hell on at
fight.
Welterweight.
It's got nothing to do with Mexican MMA, but it's great.
And that submission win over Michael Chiesa, the second straight win, seemed to elevate, in my opinion, Holland away from being Donald Cowboy Cerrone 2.0. I'll fight anybody at any time, and that's my rhythm, and I'm going to win and lose some and talk shit in the cage. Now, I think he actually is a welterweight contender, only he's fighting the guy who could have next in this entire division, Jack Della Maddalena, unbeaten in the UFC. 15-2 overall. But Madalena's coming off a split decision against a guy you never heard of in a fight that he just
who's
didn't.
Very good, who was unheralded,
true.
Turned out to be quite good.
Yeah. All I'm saying is this is a tough fight for both of them. Yeah. It's an important fight for the welterweight division. Chuck, what excites you the most about this one?
I think, honestly, in his last fight, Madalena, like, the situation being what it was, like, what he moved off a card, he goes back a week, he takes on, this is the third opponent he was supposed to be facing within that amount of time, right? The fact that he was able to win it at all should speak some volumes. It's funny that we focus on, well, you should have put him away, but we're used to him smoking guys in the first round. He has, like, four in a row? Like, he had four in a row in the first round. He was put in a very difficult situation. I think you're closer to the truth on this, but that the dude he's facing just happened to be a little better than people understood, too.
He was a champion out of a good jersey promotion.
So
he was legit.
It's one of those type of things. So the fact that he got through it, to me, is like, all right, he's got some metal. Now, you know, we're supposed to get him against Sean Brady, and which always was like, ooh, this could be a, you know, come-to-earth moment for this guy.
Yeah,
but
for both guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We said the guy's name, Basil Hefez. Hefez was the gentleman who pushed.
Yeah, that guy can fight his ass off. He was good.
He was good.
Or is it Basile? I don't know.
I don't know.
This to me is kind of going back now to almost like the Sean Brady thing where like you're casting a lot of doubt, right, onto the situation. If we're trying to escalate and trying to put this guy into a situation where he can be in contention soon, this is a tough test. I mean, this is... Madalena's not going to wrestle. I mean, I don't think, right? He's not going to try to put him. Is he going to try to do anything like this, like wrestle and put him on his back, like what we saw, like the kryptonite for Holland earlier, like what a couple years ago when guys were doing that. But I feel like it plays out mostly on the feet, and so like it could go that way. I mean, it could go either way.
Also, here. Holland kind of gets tuned up a little bit early as well, and then rebounds on the feet too. So. It's an interesting one. I feel like there's a people who are real high on Jack De La Maddalena for a lot of good reasons.
He was entering Bo Nickel hype territory for a short season.
And then, you know, the last fight was, I think he performed quite ably. I think short notice fights really skew perspective about what's happening. But there
it's
are
a
people.
Tough situation.
There are people who are concerned.
Remember when Rick Story beat Nate Marquardt? He was thrown into that.
Yeah.
Derailed all this. It's crazy. It's like, it's hard to just change opponents like
who
that.
Who made Rick Story bleed from the ears?
Was it
the cowboy?
Well, from the face,
we'll
it was Demian
frame.
Maya.
Oh,
as we started
Maya,
to
yes,
leak.
Yes,
started
just
to
making
leak.
Him leak.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I forgot what I was talking about with when you just utterly
we drag
just,
you down side streets.
But you're talking about Madalena being a super uber prospect.
Saying, there are
better.
Some people who, even the people who are high on him, they're a little concerned. He takes big punches, takes some risk, and against some of the better guys, which I think Holland certainly is at this point, a dangerous guy. I think we would all agree. There, people are wondering, does he come back to earth with this one? They're a little bit concerned.
Well,
they don't know.
You've always been a hashtag body guy. Does De La Maddalena enter Joaquin Buckley, Big E of WWE, chest fame as arguably having the best pecs in the game?
Joaquin Buckley.
New Manzo gets a
done
the
win. Oh, yeah. He does. Ooh, yeah. You know, Bilal Muhammad, I think, is a strong contender.
He's got great
first team all
chest. He's got great cans. Yeah,
he really does.
First team all cleave.
First team all chest.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar, for a heavyweight, certainly had an interesting.
Well, he had that sword, though, that had the
thorax,
interesting top.
Even Cheeto said he was cool with it. You know, you got to take that for what it's worth.
Oh, you asked Cheeto about Brock Lesnar's
thing. Yeah, we did.
It looks like a pen.
I think he said, you know, it's kind of ugly, but it works for him.
You see, that's also him showing respect to a man that is so large and that even in his 60s would still kill us all.
Dude, I look like a used car salesman in the 70s with his fucking haircut and beard combo. I've just look at this fucking.
No, it looks pretty good.
Who looks at this and goes, "This is a great combo. This is a great combo
that
works."
Combo. That's a good combo.
Apparently, your wife and your employer.
Yeah.
They can.
For now.
Don't be afraid.
Chuck, De La Maddalena looked like the brighter. The guy with the brighter future just, you know, one fight ago. Maybe Luke's saying,
did
we're
you just
overblowing.
Mitch McConnell on air?
Maybe we're just saying, what did I say? Maybe. But Kevin Holland just showed with this two-fight win streak that he seems like he's ready to be a factor. There's a quick turnaround. It always is for Kevin Holland. Who is most likely with a win, though?
Usually after he flirts with like going to another weight class, too. It's like, then he's like right back. But
who is most likely to literally leap into legit title contention with a win?
Madalena would, because I think that this type of win, especially, I just think that he's, you know, he's carrying that tension wire into it. Like, is he a guy like this or not? And I think this is a guy to get him over that hump. If he goes in there and does what he's been doing to the previous four guys, not the last guy, but the previous four guys, where he just gets it done, explosive, kind of comes out the victor, quick fight like that. I feel like it's him, man. I feel like he's that guy. That's what they, I mean, I feel like they're, that's what they're kind of grooming him for, right? Like they want him to be the guy, but this would be the one to me that would show
they're
that he
always has. Looking for the next big guy in a big market to be the face. Is he, you know, his time is limited.
Grooming is big in MMA, to be fair, though. A lot of husband slash coaches, you know what I mean? Just
I know people are like, how come you want to enroll your daughter in jiu-jitsu? I'm like, well,
to be fair, yeah.
Pretty good reason, actually.
Celine Dion has the same creeps. Ending, too, just Who? To be fair. Celine Dion, remember she had that manager slash 50-year-old guy?
They got married. Yeah, they got married.
I mean, it happened. Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis also dipped a little low. You know, we don't hold that against them.
Yeah.
Carl Malone
did as well. Wow.
Oh, Carl Malone?
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out Carl Malone's a real bad guy.
Yeah. He could have been defensive coordinator of Penn State. You know what I mean? It turns out that way.
It's like we got a 15-minute show again. Luke, everything's getting cut out.
Luke, the Kevin Holland welterweight transformation, has there been changes to the game, or is this just a better weight class?
No, makes much better decisions, better footwork, I think better takedown defense. More well-rounded, just more thoughtful. Really a guy making much more considered decisions rather than just kind of going out there with feel. And, like, the other part, too, is he still talks shit a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's even dialed that back a little bit. Not as a personality, not when there's a microphone. But, like, in the cage, he'll still do it a little bit. But you can see him much more, like, in the moment, present fighting versus in the moment on the camera. And it has, I think, in general, I mean, the Khamzat fight was, you know, didn't go his way, but he's not fighting Khamzat here, and I think he's a tough test.
He will fight anyway. Can he rescue, though? Because I feel like at one point, kind of Holland was the guy. It's almost in Madalena's spot. Like, he was the guy that we're watching.
He was a pandemic superstar.
He was. Yes. And then, like, you know, he gets taken to the ground back-to-back. One's live on ABC. I felt like at that point, it just plummets. Even though he's had good moments since then.
Right weight class.
He got more screen time than Fauci.
It's true, but like, if say he wins, this is a weird one too, because sometimes you go take out the prospect that everybody's a little excited about, people kind of hold it against you a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So like, I don't know how he.
Remember when Mickey Gall took out CM Punk? The same thing happened. You know?
It's kind of true.
Do you remember that highlight reel they made of like somewhere in practice, CM Punk taking some sparring partner's back, and everyone was like, "Guys, he figured it out."
Then they showed a suplex from WWE Royal Rumble. You're like,
"He figured it out. He figured out." Jiu-jitsu, he did it. Yeah. He did it. And then he goes in there and just gets, I mean, worked
Look,
like
I want
a
to remind
summer
you that
job.
You don't do those kind of fights in the UFC. You'll have to take that to gimmick promotions. You
so
know
true.
What I mean?
That is so true.
Is he a bad guy or a good guy?
Phil Brooks, CM
Punk? The character. Like,
I mean, normally a good guy who fights against evil, though, almost
like
a Robin.
Is he
like
a Diaz guy kind of thing?
Yeah, he's a counterculture hero. Okay. That's the best way to say it. But he rails against establishment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Though he's like deeply entrenched in the firmament of it, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like the role we play in MMA media.
Fair enough. We're nothing if not hypocrites.
Does
he call fights now with John Morgan? I feel like
he does.
All right.
He might be pretty good. I don't know.
First question. I'm just going to hold this award to remind me. Always something there to remind me. All right, that's what I got on Holland.
Hold that like it's your cat. Holland versus
Mr. Look at this guy.
Bob Dabalina.
It's heavy,
there.
Isn't it?
When I make references like that, most people don't get it. You know what I mean? To early 90s rap, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just, you know, public service.
You only
message,
know the white rappers,
just
though.
Just to remind
that is actually
people.
True.
Can I get my close up cam just to remind people? It is Colombia.
Correct.
Colombia.
Not Colombia.
That's correct. Colombia.
You say Caceres.
That's right.
I say casserole. You know what I mean? Yeah. Wow.
I got that in Cartagena. I was like, this is perfect for Uncle Gringo. By the way, this is true, what Violetta said the other day. I texted BC about this. And I had like pictures. I was looking at on Google Photos on my browser on my thing. And there was like a bunch of different people. I forget exactly what I was looking for. And she was like, "Where's your brother?" And I thought she was talking about my brother Matt.
Uncle Matt.
And I was like, "Who?" And she goes, "Uncle Gringo." And I was like, "Holy shit." I was like, "Hopefully dead, baby girl."
I can always, you know, that prevents me from ever truly like cutting Luke off from the rest of my life is Tuki's like one of the better humans of all, one of the better creations.
She is.
Another
She's an angel.
Creation.
Don't you forget it.
Aisha.
Yeah.
So glad to meet you. Hey, let's continue on down this card because there's a bantamweight.
Dude, I had to buy wipes when I was on Columbia. Can you imagine being 44 and going to the pharmacy and being like, "I need butt wipes"?
You need a camera crew following.
Do they not have TP there?
They do, but it was, dude, it was.
Do they have like rocks in it?
I had to find a way to like, deal with it. I needed some softer treatment, you know? I needed some help.
Yeah, they do have harsh.
Yeah.
Put some aloe vera.
There's going to be a bantamweight fight and Terrence Mitchell's in it. But that's not the story. So what's
Terrence
the story?
Mitchell? Terrence Mitchell?
Terrence Mitchell.
So what's the story, Morning Glory?
Why don't you run down for five or 10 minutes just Terrence Mitchell's resume for us?
I don't think I can.
Look, don't look back in anger.
I don't. Okay. I heard you say.
Raul Rosas Jr. looked as if he could really be, you know, a Dana White Contender Series graduate, the youngest.
I feel like you got thoughts on this.
I mean, yeah, like, I feel like I've been right about this,
He could have been the first teenage UFC champion, for all we know, Luke. But then he had a close-up fight, a step-up fight. Do you remember the gentleman's name who sent him to a decision defeat?
I'd have to look it up.
Isn't it Rodriguez? Christian Rodriguez? Or did I make that up?
Could the guys in the back tell us?
I mean, I do have the internet right here. I can.
I know, but I'm lazy.
All right. So, Chuck, Raul Rosas.
Who's the last guy Raul Rosas Jr. fought?
Yes.
Christian Rodriguez.
I nailed that.
Yes, very good job. Yeah, dude, like, everyone is like, oh, my God, he's so great. I'm like, yes, for 18. Yeah. He is very, very talented for 18. There can be simply no denying that. He is a skilled fighter for his age. But putting him in the UFC now is, at best, questionable.
Did we not learn from Freddie Adu?
Well,
who we some now did. No. We have some now
people,
bid.
Some people, yeah. Hey, DC United legend. DC United.
Is that a song?
The Screaming Eagles chanted that at
Redskins,
Audi Field.
Redskins were racist.
Shouts to the Screaming Eagles. But everyone was like, oh, my God, he's so great. And I'm like, guys, you haven't grown into your man strength. You haven't had that much training time. You just haven't. There hasn't been enough time. And so, like, the fact that he is good at finding the back, you know, and staying on there, but it's just he is green. He is green as shit. So, like, could he turn out to be good? Yes. But you are risking this fucking guy's development by just throwing him, even with a soft treatment in the UFC, throwing him into the UFC against, like, grown men, like, 25 years old.
We're going to see what happens. Dehydrated shit after a flight home from Colombia, right? You know, because he tries to keep those liquids in.
The wipes.
Chuck, how do you bounce back from that? I mean, he didn't lose with one punch KO.
I mean,
but he got solved. He got exposed.
He did not have a deep game.
I'm more on your side because, you know, who's the guy's name? Terrence
Mitchell.
You know, he beats Terrence Mitchell. It just keeps setting up. I'm not sure you're going to have, like, what you do with him. It has to be one of the slowest. If they're doing it without being negligent, you know, you probably want the slowest kind of build, right? Like, to put him
in equal
situations.
What if you put him in there against TJ Dillashaw's other arm just to...
We draw.
That's a stupid joke. I want you to know that. I think that's a stupid joke.
Okay, thank you.
On the record. Put that on record. But if he loses, and this is where you're like, man, he's 18 years old. If he was feeling invincible, you've just beat that out of him before he even had a chance to really get going. So you hate to see that, honestly. As precocious as he might seem, you don't want to put him in situations where you kind of break him at 18 years old or you put him in situations like that.
Luke, what lost him that fight? Was it just inexperience? Was it lack of cardio? Was it the big moment got to him? What is it?
I mean, probably a few things. I think, you know, when you're 18 and you're beating up everyone in your gym, you think, oh, I can just do that. I'll just do that at the UFC. And then you realize that shit doesn't work the same way against another pro fighter who's got some decent experience, who has, like, you know, more or less earned this position. And he didn't have anywhere else to go. And so once he faded, he didn't, you know, it was a big learning lesson for him. So the question is this, like, you know, I'm being sober about where he's at and I think what he's risking. But you're asking, like, what, you know, what could he do here? Let's see how he takes not just losses, but, like, what lessons he learns from that. His cardio wasn't where it needed to be and his strategy wasn't where it needed to be. And, like, you need to see some adjustment around that. Just thinking you're going to get on a guy's back right away and choke him out right away. Nuh-uh, dude. It doesn't work that way.
There's a boxer who was on maybe one of the Jake Paul fights who was 18.
Ashton Till.
H2O.
Right. Where would you compare? Like, so, compare that for me. Like, you have a guy in boxing.
Silva is maybe better.
Yeah.
Right, Silva's but Silv better. Tomorrow would not be...
He would not be ready for the upper.
Did Rosas get beat by a killer? Christian Rodriguez did what he had
to
do.
He's a good fighter.
Right.
He's a talented fighter.
But that's
fighter.
Not a... You know, I was going to say, if it was boxing, he wouldn't be in there with a tough opponent, but would he be in there with a Christian Rodriguez level?
No, he would not.
That's what I'm saying.
No.
I feel like if you want to do it, what's fair? I mean, and we're just
but that's the whole point. You're not supposed to be.
Right.
That's why he is looking better. That's why he has more composure. Sorry, Chuck.
But I mean, that if you want to be fair, which the UFC traditionally doesn't do, either you belong in the UFC or you don't, right? They don't try to do the boxing thing. But you'd almost have to follow that for it to feel right. I mean, because one more loss, especially if it kind of goes down where he's just overmatched and you can tell that you see the green as clearly as you did in the last fight. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. It feels
all
wrong.
He's just here too early. He's just here too early.
Sage Northcutt endured that. A few other people have. It happened.
They derailed the shit out of him.
I mean, look, you're asking a lot of a teenager, which is why you've been sort of cautious from the beginning in this role. So, Luke, is it just survive in advance and will rebuild the hype, or does he need a hype win?
No, I don't think he's anywhere close to fighting good guys. So,
well, I'm not saying that, but does he need a spectacular win?
No, he needs a disciplined one. That's what he needs. He needs a one that is a considered. How I'm going to attack this round, then the strategy for the next round, based on that, what approach we take the following frame. If it goes that long, what resources, what positions, what particular sequences, everything. That's what you have to, that's what I want to see. Like, just going out there and be like, I'm going to take this guy's back and, play speed chess with submissions.
I mean, in the UFC, too, just the way it has been set up, it doesn't matter in which way you're incompetent, right? You could be too young. You can be CM Punk, who just, they're throwing for whatever appeal. You can be James Toney's trying to cross over. It doesn't matter. If a guy is in over his head, it's a horrible look because they're not used to having that. They don't want guys in there who are just like an average Joe trying to get in a fight. And I'm not saying that Rojas is like that, but he is so young that you just don't want to have that look. It doesn't fit.
They'd prefer to have guys that are in there that are willing to accept 12-12. And go through the DWC.
That's true, though.
And also, listen, he speaks fluent Spanish. And if you're the UFC, do you want someone who you could say is like an 18? Because in boxing, the Canelo was, like a really, I think he went pro at 16.
15.
Yeah, 15. Yeah. I mean, having a teenage young Mexican sensation would be great for them.
That would be.
But I'm telling you, they pushed him out too quickly. And what will happen, I guess we'll see. But they are risking it big time.
Noche means UFC night. What would UFC be the UFC night. Morning?
You could say mañana or the next day, or you could say, desayuno would be breakfast. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Right, we'll see who has a great one. There's only one other fight.
Like I said, I have the cognitive recall of a lobotomized chimp at this point.
Just call me Angel on the morning.
I hope your pubic hairs turn to fishing hooks.
There's only one other fight that I believe really matters, truly matters on this card, and it's certainly in my household. Shavkat. It matters a lot. We can talk so much, and we have, about the renewed strength, the resurgence of the women's 125-pound division, the new stable of title HBC contenders and risers.
I know. Hold on.
Risers, baby.
Jeremy Bonner.
Who is rising more in the game of MMA on a 10-fight win streak, including 4-0 in the UFC? And Tracy Cortez.
Yep, she's on this card.
Who's taking on another 125-pound riser in Jasmine Jazdavicius.
This is the main card, right? Is this the main card?
We don't know yet. Okay. We don't know the full layout.
I believe that fight is on the main card.
It should be. I mean,
so look, Jasmine just had a breakout performance to show us exactly who she is after
massive improvement.
She had some stumbles on the way up. Cortez, though, has been perfect for 10 straight fights.
Well,
should I explain that? How good is this fight in terms of, like, the future of this division, Luke, outside of the exit of the Brian Ortega relationship and the things that we also care about?
So, remember, she had the
that
win.
Relationship? I haven't been paying
she
attention.
She had the win over Gato, but I think that it wasn't necessarily the most inspiring performance. Obviously, before that, beating Kish and Egger and then Vanessa Mello, she hasn't really been tested against someone else who's been a rising sensation in a real way in this division. Here it comes. Finally, we're going to get a good look. What we have seen has been very interesting and promising in a lot of ways. Not perfect, but a work in progress. And there's nothing wrong with that. But now we're going to bring that picture, I think, a little bit more into focus.
Yeah.
It's a great fight. I actually love this fight. Different dimensions. Like one tall and rangy, another one a little more short and stout, but still all pretty technical. It's good.
Yeah. I'm with you. I had a joke in the holster. You know, we're just gonna put that right in and walk out of the bank. So Chuck, is Jasmine Jazdavicius now a future threat to this title in this division?
Maybe. I didn't see that last fight. It was a Miranda, right? That Maverick was the last fight. I did not see that fight going down the way it ended up going.
Me neither.
So I would say the eyes are on her now, right? Like, and that's half of it, is just having people pay attention. I think this is it's a big card for her to be on. This is a good spot.
Canadian. I bet the UFC would love some Canadian talent to stand out.
Yes, and if she's able to do that in this fight against Cortez, I think she enters that space. I mean, people are paying attention. I felt like she blew up on that last fight on social media, I was like, this is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. You can sometimes see it in that sort of thing. People were paying attention to her, you know?
Yeah, I feel like the winner of this fight could be a riser, could make some noise, could get a big fight in this division.
Either way, it's a big win for the other person. Like, beating Tracy Cortez means something, and beating Jazz Davis means something.
Yeah, this is good matchmaking. You got to salute
it is good matchmaking
in that regard, and this division's been on fire. I mean, Chuck, would you agree that 125 has taken over the reins from 115 as the money women's
division? I think so now. I mean, it's crazy because we're filming this before we get the Rose Namajunas fight.
Sure.
But given her, you know, given some of the things that are happening, like Rose entering the picture and where people are at, where the stage, like people coming up, the people are in there, I do think that it's, it kind of reminds me of what men's bantamweight was last year, like where all these eight guys, you could matchmake anyway and it would
That's
be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I prefer the Baron era at bantamweight.
Yeah.
Henan Burrell, pound for pound king.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
He just pulled out of a fight that he never agreed to. Did you see that?
What?
He just got pulled from a game bred card, and then he was like, I never actually agreed to that.
Dude, he was going to fight bare knuckle MMA.
Yeah, that's a bad idea, right? I mean, he's probably still only 29, but he's been on a rough slide.
Boy, just all the CTE, huh?
He was on top of the world at one point.
Yeah, and now his brain got rattled.
DJ Dillashaw.
All right. Well, we have broken it down. Not a pay-per-view, but it's got big fight feels. UFC Noche going on in Las Vegas, and we gave you the real talk because...
By the way, there's a bunch of different Mexicans on this card, and by the way, they're all from different gyms. Like, Entren Gym is on this one. Lobo Gym is on this one. But real quickly, I just want to shout out the Mexican Fighters, make sure we name them, because that's why they're there. Let's see. By the way, there's also, like, Roman Kapilov taking on Josh Fremd, which is, like...
So he's still on the
card. Okay. But, you know, why the fuck is this here? Edgar Chaidez is on this card. I can't read this shit. Daniel Zellhuber, I guess, is on this card. Who else? Is Fernando Padilla is on this card. And Lupita Godinez, who, I didn't realize this, she trains out of Nova Scotia now?
Really?
Titan?
Oh, that's damn
Titan
near
MMA?
Paquette territory, if I'm correct.
Or maybe British Columbia. I'm not sure which Titan it is.
Do you think she's been to Mount Unike?
Ooh. If I'm right about Nova Scotia, and it's not British Columbia, because that would be the opposite side of the country. Yes, I would say yes.
That's the Maritimes. Have you been up there, Chuck?
Never been.
All right.
Never been.
I hear it's nice during certain times of the year. Probably fucking cold, bro.
Yeah.
Probably. They're in Atlantic. Jay Paquette's in Atlantic time over there.
Have you been? You've been to Canada?
I've been to Canada, but never up in that area of Canada.
No, I mean, dude, Canada's great.
Yeah.
I like Canada.
I do love Canada. I've been from Flin Flon to Kamloops,
I went whale watching in Tadoussac in Quebec.
Yeah.
How about that? That was pretty
cool. Wait.
That's way up the St. Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
That's way up.
Tofino, that's where I went in British Columbia, the Vancouver Island. Man, you're talking about whales.
Mm-hmm.
Whales breaching all over. It's like utopia out there.
BC's talking about the chicks he banged in college.
Oh, I'm sorry. My people are from Quebec, where people in the U.S. are always like, you know, I back the blue. I back the blue of Quebec. If they want to leave Canada, I'm willing to go with them.
They almost did when we were kids.
I'm willing to go with them. I just
remember that vote
that
in the 90s? They almost fucking did that shit.
That would put me on opposite sides to that Ontarian Aaron Bronstetter. And I'm willing, if I have to take arms in that, I'm going to stand with history and stand with my people, stand with the Quebecois. Do you think Ariel would turn coat over to Ontario, or do you think he'd stand with us and fight for the Fleur de Lis for the big?
Well, that's a great question, because you know what? He's a little bit.
He did jump to the Knicks Knicks to the Raptors
thing. Which I didn't notice.
That's your quarterback. You're going to defend him?
He's all also about our Nottingham, teammate. Isn't he? Like, I don't even know at this point. He's
he's definitely a Knicks guy.
He's a Forest fan, whatever.
He's a Knicks guy. He's a Knicks
Forest guy. Like he would die for Nottingham.
But you know, that's a loser franchise. I mean, let's just be honest. Wizards are too.
If we could go on an Ariel Helwani like streak of podcast awards, that'd be pretty incredible. That guy is I haven't seen the inside of his house, but his shelves must be filled with hardware.
Yeah. Yes, probably. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Well, Chuck, couple Modelo.
You have trouble saying
also
goodbye,
pictures of his family, I would imagine. You know?
Beautiful family that guy's got.
He does.
He does. He really does. Okay, so that
this
was
is just getting stupid.
No Trey Domus over here. I could have predicted a surly ending from one Luke Thomas, but he made it to the finish line.
He's just trying to finish.
He's a marathon man. I hope he gets the sleep tonight he deserves.
Put some color in that mustache,
been
for
Luke
Christ's
Thomas
sake.
Thomas of Morning Combat, our special guest, Chuck Mendenhall of The Ringer.
Yes,
of
The Ringer.
Spotify fame.
Spotify, yes, sir.
Of TheMyth.com.
Myth.com.
Your hat all the time.
Do you really?
It's my favorite midlife crisis hat besides the Bob Marley One Love hat. All right.
Yeah, baby.
All right.
Pick one up at TheMyth.com.
Luke,
do you want a shot of? Can you grab the Cannibal Corpse? Also, we have the Brendan Schaub Tiger Thick. Do you want a shot of Tiger Thick?
Oh, boy.
Actually, you know what? I'll tell you this much. The Tiger Thick is better than the Cannibal Corpse whiskey, for sure.
You know the thing about Chob is?
I have tried this.
Yeah,
he
snuck in a tasty whiskey.
Yeah, he did. He did. Actually, it's pretty good.
Anything Chob touches pretty much is gold.
Well, would you say the mountaintop moment for him was...
Oh, fuck. This is batch number one?
Was Crow Cop?
It was an expensive bottle right there. What's that?
Was Chob's mountaintop Crow Cop?
Was that the New Jersey fight? Like
the Crow Cop one was good. That was a really good one.
Good-ass knockout. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, didn't he beat Gabriel Gonzaga too?
Probably not.
I can't remember.
He had a good one in Jersey.
Which one was that?
Pro Cop? I forget now. I get them all mixed up. But he had some good moments. He had good
Luke called his second fight.
I did. Yeah. He had one in the UWC in at the Patriots.
The Ultimate Warrior Challenge.
You're calling fights back then.
I did. Yeah.
Memoir is going to be fast.
You should know that my career has not progressed as a commentator because I was quite terrible at it. Right? Very bad. Yes. Mm-hmm. Very
you
bad.
You can find Luke's further broadcasting work on Showtime. Thank you very much. For the great staff here that have stayed up, you know, a long time to put us over here, and for Chuck making the trip, it's been great.
Brian Campbell has full blown AIDS.
Yeah.
Noche. Okay. This is to the nighttime, because it's the right time.
Get fucked.
You're trying to find more to say. These are the longest.
All right, here we go. Let's close with this.
Longer and longer.
Shut the fuck up.
I touch myself. I want you
Shut
to love me. I forgive myself. I want you to remind me.